You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. And joining me now is someone that requires very little introduction because he's been on the show a few times and we love him dearly for his insight and slight global terror to keep us in check. Trevor Loudon, how are you, Trev?
I'm great, Marie. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I am very, very well. And a slightly different topic for us this morning, and that is the WHO, which for many listeners here to Reality Check Radio is a topic that we're spending a lot of time covering. And we've been talking to Dr. David Bell and Ramesh Thakur, and many people may have gone to the meeting that we held in Auckland. But you produced a video recently, which I loved because it looked at this entire pandemic treaty, pandemic agreement, pandemic, whatever name they're calling it this week. And it zoomed out a little bit on the WHO, Trev. So tell us a little bit more about that, because I think sometimes it's better to get the bigger picture to appreciate the context of what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, like, you know, the technicalities of this and the constantly changing words and that's all very important because this is a legal thing and they're going to try every legal trick they can to get everybody signed up to this. But what this really is, too, is it's a power grab by the Chinese Communist Party, because we need to see the World Health Organization as a subsidiary of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, the head of it is Mr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, I can never say his name, from Ethiopia. But as we reveal in this little 8-minute video, he was a leading member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which was a Maoist pro-Chinese communist group that took over the governorship of basically had a revolution in Ethiopia and took over. And Tedros was their health minister. These people were brutal. They were killing people, torturing people, enslaving people, major human rights violations, as in every communist revolution. But Tedros was right in the middle of it. And he was very much the number two man behind Mr. Zinawe, who was the top Marxist-Leninist ruler of Ethiopia. So these are heavy Maoist communists who oppressed their people like crazy. He was also involved in covering up several cholera outbreaks. He was involved in funneling money to arms to guerrilla groups. But his main thing is, how did he get to be the head of the World Health Organization? See, he's not even a medical doctor. He is a public health academic. He's never got a medical degree, ever. None whatsoever, but he was a great friend of China. He helped bring the Belt and Road into Ethiopia. The Chinese lobbied for him. The Chinese put him in that position. And when he was in that position, he tried to make, you know, Robert Mugabe, the brutal dictator of Zimbabwe, a goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization. But that got shot down. But the point is, he is completely a puppet of China. There's multiple photographs of him shaking hands with top Chinese leaders. And when we look at the COVID, we need to understand something. The Chinese Communist Party has what they call the mass line. And that means the Communist Party comes up with an idea and everybody must do it. Like in the Cultural Revolution at one point, they had a command that everybody had to kill 10 flies every day because there's too darn many flies. So everybody, if you only got 8, you're in trouble. Everybody had to do it. So Tedros was the super Chinese enforcer. You know, the Chinese response to COVID was, which they gave us, of course, was lockdowns, masks, and vaccines. No ifs, no buts, no hydroxychloroquine, no ivermectin, no vitamin D therapy, no herd immunity, nothing but that. We lived for 2.5 years under Chinese mass line politics. And you'll find that all of the states, all of the countries around the world that had the heaviest lockdowns, like Victoria in Australia, like New Zealand, like California, Washington, Oregon, and the United States, Italy and Europe, they are all the places with the most Chinese control. You know, Jacinda Ardern had, and Chris Hipkins, who was a Maoist, a Chinese communist Maoist, who was the Minister of Health at the time, were following the Chinese model. And Tedros was enforcing the Chinese model for the CCP. So can you imagine what would happen if they passed this treaty or protocol and everybody around the world has to conform to the World Health Organization's line? You're conforming to the Chinese Communist Party's line, because Tedros is the puppet of Communist China. This would give the Chinese Communist Party control over every economy in the world, over the health policy in every country in the world. And if you've got control of the health policy in the world, you've got control of the people. That is the big picture here. That's what's really at stake. And so we tried to convey this in this 8-minute video to get people to understand what really is at stake here.
Well, I know that with the WHO, we saw those images out of China, and really the manufactured image of the person walking in the middle of the street and then falling flat down on their face dead, which, you know, we all now know that had to have been staged. So the WHO then came in and essentially threw out hundreds of years of standard practice, yes, public health practice. And dear Tedros is supposed to be a doctor in public health policy. So, you know, he's literally throwing the baby out with the bathwater of things that have worked, tried and true, that they know of basic epidemiology.
Look, when we had scarlet fever, measles, all sorts of outbreaks, polio, we never did lockdowns. We never did any of this. It was quarantine the sick, look after the vulnerable, and keep the economy running. That was always the policy.
So, Geoffrey Tucker wrote a piece in Brownstone recently, just sort of positing the sort of Occam's razor of what is the bigger picture in terms of the pandemic response. And he looked at it very much on the basis of lockdowns in order to get a needle into every arm. And so you had the situation where the Chinese, of course, loved the lockdowns because that then gave control and also shut down economic elements around the world, which, of course, strengthens their position. Yep. And then the ability to roll out track and trace and digital control outside of their sphere of influence. It's quite sort of chilling when you think about it, because it's a case of never let a good crisis go to waste.
The 100%. They engineered the crisis. Look, I cannot prove 100% that the Chinese released the virus deliberately when they did. I think it's only about 99.999998% certain right now. But we know that when it was out there, they deliberately encouraged air travel to Western countries while clamping down on it in their own country. They deliberately spread it to us. So now we've got damaged economies all over the world, where the Chinese can buy stuff up more cheaply. They can. The U.S. military budget has been hit. That's hurt the sovereignty of countries all around the world. But it's got people conditioned to accepting the sort of, because what will come with these health protocols is sort of an ESG approach. You know, this Chinese social credit approach. You know, if you do not get a vaccine, you do not get a lockdown, you'll get a very nasty score on your personal file. And you'll find it very hard to get credit. You'll find it very hard to buy a house or get a job or travel or get your kids in the right school, maybe even to keep a bank account open. You know, this to get control of health is the way to get to control of people. And what we have seen, we lived through 2.5 years of Chinese mass line politics without the ability to enforce it legally on every country. Most of us just did it, you know, caved voluntarily. What do you think it'll be like when you get a worse pandemic and the complete legal authority to dictate policy across the globe emanating out of the World Health Organization, which means it's really emanating out of Beijing? What do you think that will be like?
Well, so I heard a radio commentator here, the leading breakfast radio commentator in New Zealand, and he brought this up in monologue, which I thought, oh, it's brave for you. You usually don't go in these sorts of places. And his opinion of this was, oh, everyone shouldn't worry about this because this is just a whole bunch of bluff and bluster. And it's like the International Criminal Court. They can say what they like and put down as many rulings as they like, but sovereign nations can just choose to ignore it if they want to and nothing will actually happen. Do you believe that that's naive?
I think that's extremely naive. You know, look, sovereign nations weren't exactly sovereign under the recent pandemic. You know, we saw what happened in New Zealand. Was that, individual sovereignty went out the window, national sovereignty went out the window, and national debt skyrocketed. Well, national debt, which has increased all over the world now, is another attack on sovereignty. So if you the Chinese are angling to be the world economic superpower. You're a country that's in huge debt. They're the economic superpower. Are you going to buck them when they hold your debt? This guy is naive beyond comprehension.
Well, particularly,
you know,
too.
When have you ever seen power given to complete power given to a small group of people and they haven't used it?
Well, I mean, they've been investing. I mean, I think we touched on this in one of the other interviews. I mean, China has been investing billions into the Pacific Basin now for decades. Winston Peters he was in coalition, two or three coalitions ago, and he was highly criticised for $1 billion that he was wanting to spend in the Pacific to help counteract the money that was being invested by China in places like Tonga and Rarotonga, and they were buying up fishing rights in those smaller nations. And people, you know, criticised him heavily for that at that time. But he saw it quite clearly for what it was. And I guess, the Chinese will call those chips in at some point, won't they?
Well, they do. They're already getting control of the Marshall Islands, I believe. They want to build a military base there. So you imagine Taiwan gets invaded, America doesn't get involved, which is very likely, and then the Chinese basically intimidate the Philippines and Taiwan and to become part of their empire. Then they start setting up bases in the Pacific. New Zealand's going to stand up against that, right? New Zealand's going to say, no, we're not going to vaccinate our people next time the pandemic comes around. We're going to stand as an individual sovereign nation. You're dreaming. We are on the verge of a major shift in the world power thing right now. You know, America has been what they, you know, the unipolar power for a long time. And the allied nations have looked to America for guidance to protect them from the thuggish nations of the world. Well, the thuggish nations of the world are now on the verge of turning those tables. So if you think they are not going to use international treaties, which they engineered and controlled and are being implemented by their lackeys, if they're not going to use them to get control over us, you're just living in la-la land. Mm. Why, this has been a big effort to get this treaty organized, you know, to get everybody in line, and they put a big propaganda effort into the whole COVID thing. This was a big effort by the Chinese Communist Party and the WHO and the lackeys that work for them. You know, virtually every doctor in the world, you know, through that COVID betrayed their Hippocratic oath to first do no harm, right? Doctors all over the world did that. They just folded when it wasn't even legally enforced. What do you think people are going to be like when it has got legal weight, when you can be fired for even saying a contrary opinion? We give the World Health Organization control over health policy. We're going to live in tyranny way beyond what we've seen now.
So who, I mean, New Zealand, as we know, have put a pause, sort of a hand up as part of that coalition agreement. And, you know, there's a huge amount of work, particularly, and even with the team here, our legal team here, to help ensure that we don't be dragged into this. But there are other nations who are standing up towards this, are there not?
Mm-hmm.
So who are they? Talk me through them.
Well, I don't know the full list. I know Slovakia has been one. Some of the smaller East European countries, I think Israel, is actually, despite their heavy lockdowns, there's a big element in Israel that's standing against this. I think the Swedes too. I'm not quite sure that the Sovereignty Coalition that I work with would know more than that. But it's been enough. There's been a real groundswell in the last couple of months, last month, to really put the kibosh on. A direct implementation. Now, what they're going to is Plan B, trying to do it through the back door, trying to legally maneuver and trying to fool people. So we can't think this is a victory. We can think this is a we won, battle won. Well, you know, everybody, you know, like all your colleagues who've been working on this, chalk one up. That's a good first step. It's a good defeat, but it ain't over. Don't give up and think you've won and go for it, because they're crafty, slimy people, and
so
they will keep pushing this.
So our little friend Beijing Biden, Joe Biden, I understand. Oh God, does he know what day of the week it is, Trevor? I mean, he doesn't seem to have to.
He just gets up and does what he's told every morning. I don't know if he gets an email from Beijing or Obama every morning or Susan Rice. He probably wouldn't even understand it. He just gets up. He's like Weekend and Bernie. He just gets up and does what he's told.
Oh, bless his little heart. Anywho.
He is the real Bernie in the White House.
Oh yeah, well, he is. So I do understand that a number of, was it GOP senators have sort of raised some concern about 24, I think. Was it senators or governors?
Yeah, Ron Johnson led that. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin.
Gosh, he's a lion, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. The Sovereignty Coalition, Frank Gaffney and Reggie Littlejohn and others, have been working like dogs on these Republican senators for the last couple of months now, just working like crazy. Well, for pretty a year, but really intensely in the last couple of months. So, yes, a whole bunch of the senators. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, said months ago that this will not fly in Florida. They've passed legislation in Florida saying no. We don't care what the World Health Organization says. They have no sovereignty over our state. But you've got the big blue states who would happily roll in line, you know, the Gavin Newsoms and, you know, the big Democrat governors. They'll go for it. So yeah, it has really become an issue. People have worked hard on this with some success, but it ain't over.
No, it's certainly not over. It is very much watch this space. And, of course, as we've mentioned before, I think the American election will set a tone. So on that, so just to let people know at time of recording, because by the time this is a pre-record, this going out, there will be a verdict in the trial. But at the moment, the jury is still out in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's likely to get convicted because the terms of the trial have been so loosely set, and the judge has been clearly playing very loose with the law to basically maximise chances of conviction. So then the thing is, what happens then? To me, it's so darn loose that there's so much room for an appeal there. I can't see how they're going to just march him off to jail. I think if he is convicted, there'll be an appeal immediately lodged, and we'll have to go through this all over again at some point in the future. But, you know, if they could put him in jail tomorrow, I'm sure they would. But my guess is a conviction, at least some some form of conviction, but a very smart, quick appeal lodged, and Trump just gets back out on the campaign trail, hopefully.
And I mean, there's been
doing
so
those 80,000 rallies in New Jersey and places like that.
Well, I think, and so much emphasis has been placed on the trial. And do you think that, again, that's been smoke and mirrors because they haven't wanted to focus on the fact that Biden is dithering over the war in the Middle East, and he's dithering over pretty much everything else, and they're quite happy to have the distraction elsewhere?
Oh, look, it's all about focusing on Trump's problems, because the Biden administration has got nothing to run on, no achievements, no a terrible economy, disasters in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, war threatening Taiwan, all of this kind of stuff, all because of the Biden administration. Every bit of it slated at them. So if they can focus the people on salacious stuff that Trump got involved with Stormy Daniels, they're going to do that. And if they can convict them and put them in jail, they will do that too. I just don't think that would be feasible.
Yeah, it is. It's certainly quite interesting. I spoke recently with Magat Wad. Have you heard of her?
No.
She's a Senegalese entrepreneur, and she's very critical of the influence of post-colonial, but especially post-colonial communist influence in Africa, which, of course, you know, Tedros is, that's the nugget.
Perfect example
of that. And I hadn't realised that, you know, once a lot of those colonial nations started to release, you know, the empires started breaking down. And she's from Senegal, so French, former French colony, that, of course, that vacuum was filled by the Stalinist, predominantly Stalinist ideologies that went in there. And then, of course, that leads it as a very healthy breeding ground for Maoism and China. I mean, I would have thought that they would have...
Oh, look, every country you look at, from Ghana to Kenya to Tanzania to the Chinese, are in there, like you wouldn't believe. From South Africa to Tunisia, the Chinese are in there. This is why Africa's so poor, because they went straight from colonialism to communism. You know, this was engineered in the British Foreign Office. You know, the communists like Jack Klugman in the British Foreign Office accelerated independence, knowing that the revolutionary movements in these countries would be the only ones organized enough to take power. And Africa has been struggling with that ever since the 60s. And both the Francophone, we saw in Portugal, they got rid of Mozambique and Angola. Immediately, both of them became Marxist-Leninist countries. You know, there was a pattern right through Africa, and it's still the pattern today. Some of them might not openly call themselves communists quite so much, but they are.
Yeah, well, I know that she was saying that there were only two countries that hadn't had a conflict since that devolution of communism, and that was Senegal and Botswana.
Ghana did. Senegal. Yeah, exactly. And good for Senegal. But, you know, this is why Africa is the basket case it is, because as they kicked the colonialists out and put the communists in, who then made them colonies of Russia and China.
And of course, they're not going to relinquish that with the need for, I mean, it's all about people and land and resources, isn't it?
Oh, look, they are just pillaging Africa's resources. They're mining, minerals, forestry, whatever. The Chinese Communist Party is just pillaging that continent. And they've, just like they're going to do to the Pacific, that's why they are buying up these politicians in the Marshall Islands. And even the Cook Islands has a big Chinese influence now. But Fiji has for some time. They're trying to do to the Pacific what they've already done to Africa. And good on Winston Peters for trying to counteract that. And shame on the politicians, both in the National Party, who are, too many of them are in bed with the Chinese, and the Labour Party, which is basically a communist organisation now. Shame on them for not supporting them.
Mm. Have you, since we chatted last, have you cast an eye on what's been going on in politics over here?
I catch up. I always read David Farrow's stuff from time to time, and I'm always trying to keep up. But I'm mainly focusing on the States right now with election year and a couple of books I'm writing, etc. So I haven't got all the nuances. I know the Green Party's been just imploding, you know, right, left, and centre, and that Chris Hipkins is not doing too well. But what else has been, you know, exciting over there?
So the latest one is Rāwiri Waititi, who's the co-leader of the Te Pāti Māori, has decided that they want to call their own Māori government. And now that the census is out, and according to him, he's upscaled. I think maths wasn't his strong suit, but he's upscaled from the 17.4% that claim Māori, that identify as Māori.
Yeah.
He's sort of up that, he's pushed that up to 20, and he's saying, well, if 20% are Māori, we should have our own parliament. We get 20% of the total budget. It's as simple as that, and then we will go sovereign and rule ourselves. Now, the fact that only 3% people actually voted for them, 3% of Māori actually voted for them during the election, I thought he was being a bit cheeky at 20, just quite.
Well, look, but this is the thing, you know. He is basically a Marxist, and so what this is called is national question politics. Stalin came up with this idea, you know, when the communists were going in the early 20th century, they were trying to invade third world countries, and there was no working class, there was no industrial working class to have a revolution, so instead they started working on the racial minorities. They started stirring up amongst the New Zealand Maori in the late 1920s. They got the Maori Queen on their side for a while. They did the same with the Australian Aborigines. So what it is, he's a Marxist. He is putting this stuff out there to cause division, to rally the young Maori radical element, that to say, well, yeah, we deserve a nation, we deserve a nation. This is all about breaking down the existing power structures of New Zealand and bringing New Zealand into a revolutionary state. You know, the working class in New Zealand doesn't want a revolution, but some of the Maori radicals absolutely want a revolution. So the communist focus is now working through the Maori Party and the Green Party, who will support them, and some elements of the Labour Party will support them as well. This is Marxist revolution coming out of Te Pāti Māori. That's exactly what it is, 100%.
Yeah, and it's certainly those within power, within those power structures of Māoridom. We saw it during COVID. So, I mean, because as you said, there was a very communist Marxist approach to how we did our pandemic response in this country.
And here's the other thing. When Hipkins went to China on his last big trip, he had a very large Maori delegation with him, all about getting the Chinese involved in Maori businesses. So this is the communist element here. The communists will use business when it suits them. So the communists engineered all these big treaty settlements so that Maori tribes could get access to a lot of money, and then the Chinese would be brought in to partner with them and bring their influence. So again, even the Maori business is being used as part of this revolutionary process. So, you know, there was no accident that Chris Hipkins, who, as I said, was a student Maoist, has worked with Maoists, pro-Chinese communists his entire career, did that, took all these big Maori businesses to link up with their Chinese counterparts. That is part of the strategy. And Te Pāti Māori is doing it on a different level, but it's all the same strategy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of nests being tethered there too. So I think that there's huge incentives for them to create this. It's almost like a manufactured revolution. That's sort of how I feel about it. And talking to so many people, you know, even because so many Māori just stay stum on that. They just don't want to cause an argument or a fight, so they let them. They think, oh, they'll get that out of their system and they'll just go away. But I don't think they will. I think it's...
No, this is a problem, you know. most Maori don't want a revolution. Most other races don't want a revolution. But you're always going to have a small disaffected minority that can be worked on. And the thing is, you've got to stand up to those people, because it's like spoiled kids. You give them a concession, they're not going to be good. They'll just be worse. So, you know, I understand you want to keep the peace. You're part of a an iwi, and you just want to have, live in peace. There's a few radicals over there who are trying to stir things up and trying to create hatred and division and get things they're not supposed to. So you let them go. Well, no. You got to nip this in the bud right from the start. We should have nipped this in the bud 40 years ago. But, you know, we saw these Marxists stirring this all up. We didn't do anything about it because they played the race card all the time, and now we're facing major issues in this country because of it.
Now, you said you're working on a couple of books. Care to elaborate further on the topics?
Well, the two main ones, I'm doing a series of books on the Marxists in the US Congress called House Un-Americans. So that these are un-Americans in the House, named after the famous House Un-American Activities Committee of the 50s. But the other one is called Comrade Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese's 40-year alliance with Australian communism. So this is all about Albo across the Tasman. You know, he just did this big voice referendum, tried to push it through, which would have given Aborigines a veto power over all government policy. This was completely organised by the Australian communist movement that Anthony Albanese has been part of since 1983 till now. He is never, he's not one of these young guys who's a bit radical when they're at college and they grow up. He has always been with these people. He still is with these people. He has these people as his senior staff members. He's following their policy to a T. But as you say, you know, how many Australians understand that Anthony Albanese is an old-fashioned communist? Not a liberal or progressive or a little bit socialist. He is an old-fashioned, dyed-in-the-wool communist, just like Chris Hipkins is. But how many New Zealanders do you think understand that? How many people do you think understand where Albanese comes from? But if you understand that, you will understand Albanese's environmental policies, his defence policies, his appeasement of China, his Aboriginal policies, and everything else. It all follows. If you want to know what Anthony Albanese is going to do tomorrow, you read the Australian Communist publications today, because he's doing it.
And his health minister, just in recent days, has been literally foaming at the mouth at some of the pushback, and particularly from this side of the Tasman, that we're having against the WHO pandemic treaty. Yeah. He just simply cannot understand it. It astounds him, Trevor.
Well, it would, because he is, and I've just forgotten his name now, but I think he's in my book. But yes, exactly. His whole government is on this thing. And they can't understand why people aren't progressives. They can't understand why we don't understand the great future we have planned. They have planned for us. We're just bloody cavemen. You know, how could these stupid New Zealanders be so backward that they don't want to sign up to this wonderful, healthy future that the World Health Organization is planning for us? So we got to understand there are certain people in society who have a socialist mentality, which is a form of mental illness, basically, and they work their way to the top, and they enforce their stupid ideas on everybody else. And if we don't follow on, we're saboteurs. And you know what you do to saboteurs, don't you?
So, speaking of saboteurs, Rishi has announced an election on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Interesting choice of date, I felt.
Yes. I thought that too.
Symbolism there, Rishi. But anyway, so according to the polls, if one is to believe the polls, Sir Keir Starmer is looking like a dead cert shoo-in. And, you know, so their labor policy, this is one of the things that I find rather interesting. There has been, because I follow the gender issues quite closely.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a lot of work around the CAS report and also the WPATH files. And the Labor, so far, the spokespeople for Labor has said that they would be looking at honouring what are the current changes made in the NHS and in those reports, which I find interesting because, of course, if that were reversed in with the Labor Party here, absolutely not. In terms of the British Labor Party, in terms of their old school working-based roots, what sort of things can you see there? Are they better, worse, or same rubbish, different day in terms of their ideologies?
Well, see, Keir Starmer has done a lot of work to purge the left, but that's not quite the full story. See, under Corbyn, who was a full-on Marxist
and deeply Communist Party, and not very likable.
No, not very likable. He was the Bernie Sanders of Britain. And he led the party into a massive disaster, a disastrous defeat. So Keir Starmer is doing his best to distance himself from that form of socialism. But Keir Starmer is a Fabian. So he's more the moderate, long-term, legalistic type of socialist. Corbyn was more the let's have the revolution now, rah-rah for communism type of socialist. And Corbyn was completely backed by the Communist Party of Britain, which, by the way, one of its key members is now the head of the Behavioural Modification Unit of the World Health Organization and getting ready to enforce the next pandemic. Her name is Susan Mickey, a 60-year veteran of the Communist Party of Britain, known as the Mask Nazi and Stalin's nanny because she was so damn extreme. But anyway, she's now the head of the unit that will tell us how to behave. So she's a social psychologist. She'll tell us the right messages, so we'll do what we're told. But so Keir Starmer has purged that communist Stalinist left, but he's a socialist Fabian guy. So I think he'd be a big improvement on Jeremy Corbyn, but he's still going to lead Britain in a very socialist direction.
Mm.
And I think he will kowtow very much to whatever the World Health Organization tells him. So, but Rishi Sunak is not exactly an inspiring patriotic type of guy either. You know, I just wish they had Boris back, you know, and Boris with a bit more sense. So, you know, look, it looks like Starmer will take over, but Starmer will just keep implementing the socialism, but just maybe a little bit slower than Corbyn. So it's not looking good for Britain right now.
No, and I know the Lib Dems are a little bit more progressive again. So, you know, even if he doesn't get enough votes, he can cozy up to them. They'd make happy bedfellows. But I guess the one interesting thing in British politics is their sort of Winston Peters type character has rolled out of retirement. And I think he's fronting up for Reclaim now, Nigel Farage. And he's
That's right. He's always good, but you look at it. You know, you got Canada under the socialist Trudeau, Australia under the communist Albanese, Britain about to go under the socialist Starmer, United States under the pro-Chinese lackey Biden. Look, New Zealand is the only one holding the line right now.
Yeah.
You know, and so we should be at least grateful for that.
Mm,
and we need to just keep pushing New Zealand in the right direction here. Just fortify the country as much as possible. And I'm not saying everything's ideal with the new government, but I'll tell you what, if Chris Hipkins had got a second term, can you imagine the debt we'd be in pretty soon and the horror that would come to New Zealand, the racial policies, the division. At least New Zealand has turned that corner, at least some of that stuff.
Yeah, well, the budget was recently released, and probably the best thing about the budget, and the thing that heartened me greatly, Trevor, was how absolutely boring it was, which was great as far as
great progressive initiatives.
No.
No great, you know, big government programs. It was just back to basics, try and get the budget under control, try and get the finances under control. Yeah, exactly. And maybe it may seem boring, but it's going to be a lot better for New Zealand in the long run, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's been great to catch up with you. We'll definitely have to do it again before the
American... it's always good. I love to hear a Kiwi voice. I don't hear many of them in Southwest Florida.
No, I know, indeed. And it's also good to see these wider implications, these wider geopolitical implications, because, you know, they do have an influence. And I think we sometimes can get bogged down by the nuances or milking mice, as our accountant calls it, the little details of things, you know, focus on the Stormy Daniels and not look at the bigger picture of what's going on in the American election. We need to sometimes zoom out in order to get the full
picture. Well, we've got to look at this as a balance of power thing. This is a big power struggle right now between the free nations and the unfree nations. And we've got to play a part in that. But I just remind of a funny story, though. There's a Facebook group in Florida, Kiwis and Australians in Florida. And I just looked at it, and one of the people in it used to catch my school bus in Kaiapoi back in the 1970s. She was on my high school bus. She used to live just around the road from me. Now she lives in Florida, about 100 miles away from me. You couldn't, you know, strange world, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I mean, I've always said that for Kiwis, for flightless birds, it's amazing where we end up.
Where they do, they get around. I meet them all over. Not many around my area, but yeah, we do catch up on them. You know, they Kiwi women make very attractive wives to Americans, and a lot of them end up over there that way. So
yeah,
and so it's always good to hear the accent.
And also too, I mean, we haven't even got on to immigration, but, you know, at the moment more New Zealanders are leaving than they've ever had before since the 90s. And, you know, if you can get into the US, I think a number are going there, particularly to states like Florida, like South Dakota, like, you know, places where are moving forward. And that's the beautiful thing about the American system, is that you really essentially have 50 countries under one broad umbrella. And so you can actually select a state that will, you know, reflect your ideals and where you want to be. Actually, just before I go, the I think Porkfest was just on in New Hampshire recently, wasn't it?
Porkfest, okay. I don't know.
I think it's the Libertarians. The Libertarians meeting in Wee Shindig.
Okay. I didn't know it was called that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, because RFK Jr., he, I think he was hoping to get the endorsement from the Libertarians, and that kind of fell flat, which was a bit disappointing. So he's now wanting to try and get Trump and Biden to debate him. But it's, you know, obviously Trump is otherwise engaged, and Biden, well, he can't string a sentence together. I think he'll be struggling.
Well, I was shocked that Biden wants to debate Trump. I can't see what the heck he has to gain from that. I don't know how that would work, or how he sees it any advantage. But RFK, you know, Trump reached out to RFK, wanted to get him on board, but RFK wanted to go his own way. I maybe thought he could get the Libertarian endorsement, but I'll tell you what, the Libertarian candidate is a shocker. He's an ex-Democrat who's basically using the Libertarian Party for his own purposes. So, there's no great hope there. But, yeah, I can't figure out why Biden would ever want to debate Trump. I'd be running away from Trump as far as I could if I was him. And he's not going to debate RFK Jr., you can guarantee that.
No, I just wonder whether or not his minders have pushed him into that so he can fall flat on his face and then they've got a reason to
to try and parachute somebody else in at the convention. Embarrass himself in front of the whole country. Who knows? Because the Democrats are tearing their hair out right now. They're just every day it gets worse for them. So that's why they have to do everything they can to destroy Trump, because they got nothing to run on, nothing at all.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll definitely catch up before then, that's for sure. Hey, look, this has been Trevor Lart. This has been Trevor Loudon here on Counterculture with Reality Check Radio. Don't disappear, of course. Marty will be along very, very shortly here with Counterculture. See you soon.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.